Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show of At Home with Victoria, with your host, Victoria Gaither, and co-host, Michael Kay.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us this evening. I am Victoria Gaither, your fabulous host of At Home with Victoria. If, in fact, you are new to our show, hey, listen, I'm excited that you're here. I hope you come back because we've got a really, really fun lineup for you tonight. At Home with Victoria was started about a year and a half ago where, you know, we wanted to bring different people on the show within the nonprofit community, the news community, actors, actresses, sort of a smorgasbord of folks that come on the show. So we've been very successful with the show so far. So just a quick thank you to all of our fans and listeners out there. We've gotten up and over to 30,000 listeners. So keep up the work and continue to tell people about us. But tonight, guess who is in the house? He has been here before, but he hasn't been here to talk to us kind of for his own show. So the one and only reality TV star Jay Qualls is in the house. If Jay's name sounds familiar to you, it very well should, because Jay is in the business of making cakes. In fact, he is the owner of Maple Cakes, and you saw him again on TLC's The Cake Boss, The Next Great Baker. So it is with a great pleasure that I welcome Jay to At Home with Victoria. Jay, thanks for being here with us tonight.
Thank you. Good evening. How are you doing?
Well, I'm very happy because you're here. So because you're here and we're talking cakes and about your career, that makes me very happy. So for those folks out there that haven't had the opportunity to hear you talk about your experience when you were on The Next Great Baker, just briefly kind of go over that and tell us what that experience was like for you.
Well, I mean... It was an experience, that is for sure. I debated whether or not to go on TV to do, you know, to do reality TV at first, because it was a strenuous process to get even to audition and get chosen for the show. And then once I got chosen, I was like, uh-oh, what have I done now? So out of thousands of applicants that auditioned, they picked the top 20. And then I got a call that I had made the top 20. And you can watch my audition video on YouTube now, by the way, if you want to, or at TLC.com. And you just do it under Jay Qualls' audition for TLC. It's pretty funny.
Yes,
it is. We threw it together one afternoon. So
I wanted to stop you real quickly because we had this conversation before, but I have seen it on YouTube, and I have to say, if you have not seen it, do yourself a treat and watch it, because, Jay, it is the funniest thing ever. Who came up with the idea to do it?
Well, you know, obviously they wanted us to be creative whenever we auditioned. I had auditioned for TV twice before for a couple of other shows, and frankly, I know why I didn't get chosen, because it was quite boring. So when I got the opportunity to audition, the call to audition for this particular show, I kind of threw away the script and the rules and just said, I'm just going to do what I do and have fun and be me. And basically, what we literally had less than 12 hours to come up with a concept and get it uploaded to the production company. And it had to be less than 3 minutes. So it had to encapsulate a lot of things that told a story about me and who I was and capture my personality. So basically, the concept was that I'm married to my work, which I truly am, and I eat, sleep, and breathe cake. So we created scenarios that I do on a daily basis here at home where cake kind of infringes on my life. And that's how the concept for the audition tape came up. So I slept with a wedding cake, I ate with a wedding cake, I drank coffee with a wedding cake, I swam with a wedding cake, and played volleyball, drove with a wedding cake, which I do every Saturday.
It was very, very, very funny, I must say. Now, while you're in this process, so you get picked for the show, you're on the show, and a lot of what people don't know behind the scenes, you guys are really taping 24/7 nonstop back to back. You really don't get many breaks, do you?
Pretty much. It's it's pretty grueling. What we did, we taped everything back in September for the season. The season started on TV on December 6th. And we taped everything pretty much in about 21 days. And I was gone for right at a month because I went 7 out of 8 episodes on the show. And we worked usually 16 to 18, sometimes 20 hours a day. We were on set. And some days we got breaks to eat, and some days we didn't, and mm-hmm. very little sleep. And as you go further into the competition, it gets more difficult, and less sleep and less food and more hours and harder mm-hmm. tasks, and all the baker's challenges get more difficult, and mm-hmm. they throw curves at you, and it's not easy. I'll be honest with you, it's not easy, but it gave me a lot of perspective, I'll tell you that, about what I'm capable of doing.
I'm sure it did, because it seems like, and like you said, you know, each challenge, that level of intensity, it constantly increases, and it's constantly pushing you to your edge. So I guess in that sense, the good thing about it is that I'm sure you never doubt yourself as a baker, because it is, I think, what you guys do very much. I do consider it sort of art as well. But also, I always think that no matter what field you're in, when you're kind of pushed to your limits, you know, a lot of times that's when the best sort of comes out in all of us.
Well, you know, it's really funny because I very rarely get nervous in any situation. I'm not a shy guy, as you can imagine. And the only times I ever got nervous is in the Baker's Challenge, when I was timed. And what people mm-hmm. didn't see is that there was a few curveballs that were hidden and thrown in there that we had to overcome during those timed challenges. And that was really the only time that I actually, like, my hands started shaking. I was like, oh, my God, what the heck is going on? You know, I was like, what? Why are you nervous? I never get nervous, very rarely, you know. And so,
well, and, you know, if I can recall, I do think it was one episode where you actually mentioned, you know, when they kind of do the sit-down part where you're narrating and talking about whatever it is that happened, and you kind of mentioned that you got a little nervous, and you actually said that this is crazy because I never ever get nervous, but for me as a person just sitting there watching you, that was very cool that you said that, because I really appreciated the honesty in you saying that.
Well, you know, it's weird because about the third or fourth day into shooting, I gained a perspective. First of all, I mean, obviously you want to win. I mean, if they pick you and you're a competitive person, which
right.
I am, I mean, I want to win, but it wasn't my only motive for going on the show. I really wanted to showcase what I was capable of doing under pressure and
mm-hmm,
show
mm-hmm.
America that I'm more to, you know, there's more to me than just, you know, baking or just decorating a cake. There's a personality there, which is kind of weird because I mean, you didn't get to see everything that happened, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was certainly characters that were written in the script and things like that, that I don't think my full personality got to come through on the show, but I'm okay with how things turned out completely. Like, I'm very happy with the outcome, and
mm-hmm.
very, very happy with Dana, you know, and
And speaking of Dana, became, I know all of you guys, I'm sure you sort of have a special connection with each other just for the mere fact you went through that process together. You were
right.
On that show.
Yeah.
But I know you and Dana became really, really good friends even once the taping stopped.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing, like, that you spend such a short period of time with 10 or 9 people, or in a group of people, I should say, because production and everybody was so nice and so, well, you know, as nice as reality TV production can be, but you know what I mean. But
mm-hmm.
Dana, I don't know what it is. Dana is so freaking hilarious. Like, he can say, he's real quiet, but when he's not around other people, he'll say stuff that just makes me fall
mm-hmm.
out in the floor. If I could be having the worst day and just spend 15 minutes with him, and he calls us freaking frack. He said, when we work
right.
together, it's like frick and frack. And, you know, if you watch the show, you can see clearly that he, Megan, and I, if we ever worked together, we always dominated and
mm-hmm.
did very well in the challenges. And I think they kind of was hesitant about putting us together sometimes because mm-hmm. I think we dominated pretty good. So Dana and I worked very well together, and I have my own it's really weird because I have a special relationship with each person in a different way that
yeah.
in the cast. We all still stay in contact, and they're all doing wonderful things, and we've all got great things going on, and it's given us a great platform and opportunity. So I really would do it again. Like, I really want to go back
Absolutely.
To season two. I want to go on season two, and I want to be the judge for the wedding cake challenge for season
there
two.
There you go.
Well, you know what?
I would not be surprised if, in fact, something like that happens for you, or I wouldn't be surprised if another network or even TLC or somebody else came and just kind of had you, you know, do your own show there at Maple Cakes where you are in Tennessee and kind of do your own show. Because, you know, I think once you guys kind of put yourself out there, you know, I know for a fact being in television, the television world and executives are always watching. So I do not think, I guess what I'm trying to say, that was the last of us seeing you on television. And I firmly believe that. Yeah, I believe that. Hey, listen, let's go ahead and bring in producer and entertainment co-host Michael Cade to join in on the conversation. For those of you that are just joining us, Jay Qualls is who we are talking to. He is the owner of Maple Cakes, but more importantly, he was on TLC's The Next Great Baker. So he stopped by on At Home with Victoria today. So we're chatting about that. But more importantly, Michael K., I think we're going to start talking about some of Jay's new projects that he's got coming up.
Absolutely. Good evening, everybody. Hi, Vic. Hi, Jay. How are you? You sound fantastic, by the way.
I'm good, Michael. I just went and worked out, so... I'm feeling pretty frisky right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, pretty awesome. Plus, you got a little tan in, too, so I don't know who you're trying to impress, but it's working.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't cut my tanning short for very many people, but I did for you all, for sure.
Oh, thank you,
Jay. How kind of you.
I know, right? Can you tell I'm a kiss-up?
That's okay. We love it. We love it, don't we, Mike? Okay.
Absolutely, I love it. Jay, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about, you know, I'm very proud to mention that from Wedding Wire, you won the Bride's Choice Awards 2011. But you've
Yay.
Also been in, numerous publications, national magazines such as Southern Living Weddings, People Magazine, Town and Country Weddings, Get Married Magazine, Southern Wedding Magazines. But I think, would I be fair in assuming that your cream of the crop would have had to been Martha Stewart's Weddings? Because that's pretty much that's big time.
You know, I'm truly blessed in so many ways and very fortunate in a short period of time to get to participate in this great industry that I love so much. And weddings are so cool and meaningful and touch people's lives in so many different ways, you know, emotionally. And mm-hmm. to have been called and to collaborate with Martha Stewart Weddings and just participate at all in that is so amazing, like in such a short period of time, you know. And I'll be honest with you, you know, being from the South, Southern Living is Southern Living's pretty
That's
cool too, and we were just featured in that as well in a wedding from Alabama that we did last spring and with Tara Gerard. And you know, just it kind of blows my mind when I look at it, and really I'm just doing what I love, honest to goodness, and creating the art that I love to do and trying to make a difference in people's days, you know. And really reach the essence of the bride, of each bride, and I don't know, it's kind of crazy, to be honest with you, what's happened in the past year. And
Jay, would you say your business, I mean, I know you've always done very, very good business there in Tennessee at Maple Cakes. Would you say that ever since you've been on the show, would you say your business has gone up some?
You know, that's been the weird part about the whole thing. It's not... I mean, I think maybe it scares some people, to be honest with you, to go on TV, because I think, and even the phenomenon carried through when we did Martha Stewart, you know, I think people see you in Martha Stewart as that brand next to that brand, and they think, oh my gosh, well, there's no sense in even calling them because we can't afford
exactly.
them. And it's simply not true. That's part of the education process that I'm trying to build with my consulting, is that brides need to be educated that just because you're associated with a brand doesn't mean that you're too expensive to touch. It means that you can have a very good quality product that is associated with a great brand. And mm-hmm. we didn't raise our prices because we went into Martha Stewart or in Southern Living or that I went on TV. I didn't see it necessary. I mean, our prices aren't arbitrary. So the business, I don't know if it really hasn't changed much as far as driving traffic. I mean, we certainly get a lot more attention, and it gives you credibility. But we treat every bride the same, whether it is a bride that was referred to us through Martha Stewart Weddings or Southern Living, or a bride from a consultant or a planner or an event coordinator. We think every bride's cake is very important. And that's why we focus so much on Maple's wedding cakes. On wedding cakes is because I just think the art of the wedding cake is just, I don't need to be fumbling around with other, you know, things while I'm trying to produce a beautiful wedding cake for a $250,000 wedding. Yeah. You know, or even $1 million wedding.
You've got an event coming up too, March 26th to 27th, the National Capital Area Cake Show. Is that true? And what does that entail?
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I was invited there this year. That's Norman Davis from Food Network and Ultimate Cake Off. That's his show in Virginia, in Annandale, Virginia. And I'll be teaching a class there, the Platinum and Pearls cake, which is the cake on my website at maplesweddingcakes.com. It's the one with the black ribbon and the brooches. The sugar ribbon, we'll be teaching sugar ribbon. So there's a class there on Sunday, and I'll be competing live. And Dana is competing live there, too, in a cake competition. And I'm competing live in a cake competition, and Dana and I are on the same team. So we're doing a wedding cake.
And what's the location of that? Jay, where's the location? Where's that taking place?
It's in Annandale, Virginia, and it's the National Capital Area Cake Show. And if you just Google that or just do any kind of Google search on the National Area Capital Cake Show, you'll find it. And you can go to my Facebook, Jay Qualls, if you want to, and find it as well.
Okay, great.
And then we're doing that show, and then April 24th through the 27th, I'll be at the Southern Women's Show here in Nashville all 4 days on the Celebrity Cooking Stage on Thursday and on Sunday. Dana will be also appearing with me during that on Sunday. He's flying down to Tennessee, and he and I are going to do the wedding cake that we did on the show together. We're going to do that live in front of, I don't know how many people are coming. The more the merrier.
Right.
And I'm going to Alaska, if you can believe that.
Wow. Say hi to Sarah.
I told him I'm going to Wasilla, actually, to teach. And wow. I told her I wanted to meet her. And,
well, why not?
And so I don't know. You know, I just want to just say hi to her and just kind of look at her.
Well, make sure if you do that you have to take a picture and post that on Facebook so all of your fans and we can take a look at that.
Oh, heck yeah, I definitely will for sure. That's one of the things that's coming from the show that has been pretty cool is that people finally get to see what I do and are interested in what I do. So we got some other stuff coming up that's going to be really, really cool, I think, if everything goes through, that you're going to be really surprised and happy to see on later.
Well,
I can't talk about it anymore, but...
Every single thing that you have going on right now, you know, it's absolutely big, and it's absolutely something that I think that certainly you deserve. And one thing, Jay, that I love what you talk about, but that being your industry, because I think, like, for example, my industry is journalism, and I think a lot of people who spend their lives and dedicate their lives to their passion and their profession. It is very nice when you know your own peers and your own colleagues within your industry get a chance to kind of see you highlighted and get a chance to see you in those magazines. So that So that in itself is very, very cool. And the reason why I say that, because a lot of times I think sometimes people think that, oh, you know, you just kind of, not you in particular, but somebody just bakes a cake or somebody just writes a story, and then all of a sudden, poof, you know, it's magic that they get in magazines and stuff. But what people don't understand is that you've been doing this your whole life. This isn't something that you just kind of jumped into and said, oh, I think I want to do this. This really is what you do.
Well, you know, it's weird how I tell people this, I tell my students this all the time, and you hear artists say it all the time, entertainers and actors, and where they say, you know, if you're really doing what you love, it doesn't feel like work. But what I think it really comes down to is if you find what your passion is, it's easier to work harder for your passion than it is to work something that you're dispassionate about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
For years I worked in a job that was just okay and that I was just kind of happy doing. But when I was forced out of a job due to downsizing 7 years ago, I decided at that point I was not going to go back into the corporate world in any way and take control of my own destiny. And, like, I think that's a really important message to people who are enthusiasts or artists, cake artists or any kind of artists. I'm living proof here to tell you today on your show that if you want something bad enough, you make it happen. And that's the great part about being here and being free to make choices is if I can do what I've done in a short period of time, and you ain't seen nothing yet, by the way. You just wait.
I believe
you. And I usually get what I want, and I think having drive and enthusiasm being passionate about what you love is what makes things like that happen. But I don't ever want to discourage. I met this young man at the cake show in Austin 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he was 14 or 15 years old. And that youngin' could do string work that rocked my world. I was like, holy cow. And I told him, I was like, you keep doing this, and somebody's going to be scared of you one day, boy.
Right.
Wow. It was amazing. And to be able to, like, teach those individuals and have them.
You there, Jay?
Yeah, I think Jay, Jay is still there. Jay, are you still with us? I think Jay dropped out. But, Michael, I think what he was saying was very important about passion for what it is that you want to do and sort of never, ever give up on what it is that you want to do.
Absolutely. He is proof positive of that in his competition. He's a fantastic guy, and I'm really proud that we were able to go ahead and follow him on his quest to the Great Baker. But, Jay, if you're still listening, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate you taking the time out.
He had to go back and work on his and finish working on the other half of his tan. And, you know, Michael, it's funny because as we were talking, I clicked onto his Facebook page, and he had on his Facebook page about 45 minutes ago that he was at Gold's Gym. And then underneath that, Michael K. writes, don't you have somewhere to be in 25 minutes, like on At Home with Victoria? So,
you better hurry.
Yeah, you better hurry. So that was actually very, very cool. But to wrap up that with Jay, before we continue with our next guest tonight, and that would be the one and only Alex Cambert. But just to let you know, so guys, you can find Jay on Facebook. He's also on Twitter. So go ahead and continue to follow him. And he's got that big cake show coming up in Northern Virginia. Michael K., I think I'm going to look at the calendar and see if I can't make that one myself, because I'd love to go to that and see them in person in Northern Virginia in the D.C. area, kind of do their things, because that's where that national Capital Cake Show is going to take place. So that sounds like that would be a lot of fun.
Minutes away from you.
Yes, it is. It is. So, Michael, you might as well just stay on the line when we bring our next guest on. So you want to do the honor of saying a little bit about Alex and then bring him on, besides that he absolutely is so handsome. My goodness, I cannot take my eyes off of his picture.
I know he's the sexiest Mexican I've ever met in my life. Can I say that on the air?
My goodness. Yes, you may say that on air. And you know what's funny is that, of course, when I found out he was coming on the show, so you know me, the TV journalist, the news anchor, I have to go to Google and YouTube. So, of course, I go. I find all every single thing that I can find of him. And, you know, the thing is with me is, you know, I'm a woman, so I'm like, okay, this guy's cute. But what was funny was that I never paid any attention to all the interviews that he was doing, Julia Roberts, he's on Oprah, Tom Cruise. I mean, this guy is everywhere. I mean, like, he literally is one of those TV hosts that has A-list people back-to-back that come on his show all the time. But, you know, I have to say I couldn't really pay attention to his interviews because I kept looking at him. He's so handsome. Is that him laughing?
Yeah, I'm laughing because I've never been called handsome. I'm not going to say a damn word. I'm just going to let you keep on going. I like it. I never knew I was. I mean, really. I was like, God bless you. God bless you. My mother is somewhere going, that's right, Victoria. He is handsome. He's very, very handsome. That makes me laugh. Thank you so much.
Well, definitely, all I've got to say, dude, is Mommy and Daddy did a great job with you. So with that said, I thank you so much for being with us, and welcome to the show. Tell us all about yourself. Start talking. Tell us.
What you want to know. I love what I do. You know, I think that's what you get from Jay. What Jay was saying is the most important thing is you've got to love what you do. I don't have a lot of talent. I don't have a lot of ability. I just have fun with my guests that I interview. And that's really what I do. And I think you see that, you know, whether we have Sandra Bullock talking out of her butt in Spanish that we had in Telemundo, whether we have Julia Roberts crying so much she needs a tissue. That's the kind of thing that we like to do. And you know what? It's infectious. So I'm appreciative for that. And we've done a whole bunch of stuff, been on Good Morning America. You know, you can list, you name it. Find me on Facebook and you can see all the stuff. But, you know, I've been really lucky and I'm blessed. So
Now let me ask you this because in my television career, I sort of got into TV kind of by accident. What I really wanted to do was work for the airline company and be an air traffic controller or bring airplanes in. So that's a huge switch from doing that to being a television news anchor. So
that's weird.
Victoria,
I started as a stewardess, and that's really
serious?
Weird. No, I'm kidding.
Wow.
I'm just totally pulling your leg. I was like, I'm playing with you. So how did you wind up on TV?
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, I think with me it just boils down to I always love news and information and being born and raised in D.C., you know, D.C. is the place to be in terms of information, the White House, the government agency. So that was always of interest to me. But I guess now in your case, doing what you do now, is that something that you were always interested in since you can remember, or did you come into that later on in life?
Not really. I was going to be a lawyer. You know, I was the smart little sort of debater in high school. I was like 5'2", you know, I had a gigantic head. I looked like a Pez dispenser. People would like push on my forehead and they'd expect candy to pop out of my throat. I mean, I was a mess. I was like a bobblehead,
right?
You know, and I was, I was pretty good as a debater. I was a champion debater, traveled the country, and I was very lucky in that. But I went to college, a great place in Minnesota, you know, Carleton College, Northfield, Minnesota. I mean, first of all, imagine a Cuban in Minnesota. As soon as I walked into the state, everyone was thinking, one of these things is not like the other. You know, I was the brown boy. And so I go to college there, and I fell in love with improv. I started an improv group there, and I just loved it. I love that sound of making people laugh. And especially if you can combine it with some sort of intelligence and have something witty. It was great. So, you know, I went, I'm immigrant, you know, son of an immigrant, the firstborn son of a Cuban immigrant, and they were so proud, you know, first to go away to college in my family. They were really excited. I got into Columbia Law, and then I have to tell my father that I'm not going to Columbia Law.
Oh, my goodness. I can imagine that conversation.
It was not very nice because my father told me like this, we did not spend $67,000. And I was like, well, $67,000 for you to be a comedy boy. And I'm like, well, it's not comedy boy, Dad. It's not
called
a comedy boy. And then he hung up on me and said, and by the way, you're not funny. And he hung up. And
you're not funny.
Yeah. And by the way, my dad later on, he would come to my shows, and my parents could not be any more opposite. My mom is very over the top. She's sort of like a refugee from a Spanish soap opera. You know, you have a cold and she thinks you have cancer. thing. And I love it. And my father is very stoic. And I remember when I did improv after college in a group called Mental Floss in Miami, he goes, "Son, you are very funny." And I was like, "Oh, great, Dad! Any funnier, I think you might have slapped into a coma." I would see him in the audience go clear, boom, and that was sort of my experience. But so I decided not to go. I decided to follow my heart. You know, I know that sounds corny or whatnot, but I could have been a lawyer. I could have been probably successful because I've got a mouth on me, but I didn't want to do that. So I went to Miami and I started improv there. And then I met up with
it. That takes a lot of guts, though. I mean, Alex, I think that takes a lot of guts because, you know, the idea of you know, being putting yourself out there on the stage, I mean, at least in my opinion, that takes a lot of guts to do because part of it is that you have to really, really, really have some type of confidence and self-assurance in yourself that, yes, Alex, I can get up on the stage, I can do this, I can make these people laugh, you know. I mean, did you ever have moments where – you know, you're kind of doing your thing and the connection wasn't happening between you and the audience?
You almost have, I don't know if it's confidence or abject stupidity.
Right.
Because at that point, you know, I graduated school, I was 20. I didn't know. I was like, I can make people laugh. You know, I didn't know, but I've never had that moment where I 100% absolutely bombed. I think because I wasn't trying to be funny all the time. I was just enjoying myself. And I think when you enjoy yourself and when you are true to whatever art you're doing, people go along with you with the ride. I never try to think that I'm smarter than the audience. I'm one of the audience people. Listen, when I interviewed Harrison Ford, you know how you said you could not pay attention to anything I was saying? I don't know what that man said. Because to me, it was Harrison Ford. I'm sitting there going, he's talking, and in my head I'm going, dun, 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 dun. Throw me the grail, Indy. Throw me the grail. No idea. I mean, I interviewed Jean-Claude Van Damme, and I'm like, he is short. I think I could take this brother out.
I could kill him.
Yeah, and I'm like a giant next to him. And so he's talking. He's like, I am doing my movie. I love my movie. This is a good movie. And I'm talking about, like, I can step on this man.
That is too funny. Michael, okay, do you have any questions? I think I've been hogging up the whole interview process.
Yeah, you know, she always hogs the show, Alex. She goes ahead and makes me sit on my lips for 15 minutes. I have nothing. No, I'm totally kidding. But I just want to go back before all the good stuff happened.
You started
back in Miami at WAXY 106 FM, co-hosting Ellen and Alex in the Morning.
Yeah.
And apparently ratings doubled during your time there. But I actually found the California Highway Patrol a cop who pulled over the woman who ran her car off the road from laughing so hard listening to your show, and he's on the line right now.
Wow.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's okay,
true.
I'm totally joking.
I wanted to hear the cop because that actually did happen. You've done your research. You know, we got a call one day from the Florida Highway Patrol, and they're like, Ellen and Alex, are you guys there? And I literally was like, I'm the Latin guy. I'm scared when I see the police. You know,
right.
I'm immediately like, no, it was her. It was the white lady I'm co-hosting with. And I was pointing fingers, and they called to let us know that someone was laughing so hard that they ran off the road. And it just made us really laugh. I mean, we obviously were concerned for the woman's safety, but we were like, oh, this is really funny. And what she was laughing at is we had no budget. We were sort of the show that no one thought would do well. We were doing every day, you know, like the little engine that could. I think I can. Because we were subbing for a legend, a guy named Rick Shaw, who had been in Miami since, I think, the year 65 A.D.
And he had
been in radio forever. And I was 21 at the time or 22. I'd never done radio. And I basically went in with my friend Ellen Jaffe, who's been doing radio for a long time in Miami, and I said, sir, I think we could do a good job. And he's like, well, kid, okay, we have 2 weeks here. You're kind of funny. And I did it for 2 weeks for free, and it turned into a couple years. And it was really interesting because what she was laughing at, the woman who ran off the road, was something we would do Winning Wednesdays. We had no budget. So it was me just saying, Winning Wednesday, win, 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 win. And whatever I pulled out of Ellen's purse is what people would win. And I will tell you, I mean, I gave away more than one feminine hygiene product. it was just whatever I pulled in is what you'd win. And we just had a really, really good time. And it was a lot of fun.
You know, that kind of show, to me, sounds like probably one of the reasons, or many of the reasons why it was funny, was because it sounded like it was just a completely organic show where you guys, like you said, you didn't have all the fancy stuff, you didn't have budget for the show, so you really literally had to kind of sit down and think about, you know, from basic as basic, what can we do to kind of do this and have fun with it and it actually work. I think that's a very cool story.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. I mean, I was so new to radio. I'd never done anything like that before. I mean, I would do the whole show standing up as if I was performing, you know, and my co-host mm-hmm. would be like, you know, no one's watching you. Why are you making
right.
those faces?
Right.
And I was like, I don't know. And it was just the way, you know, we had fun. And I just tried to make my friend, who was my co-host and my mentor at the time, I just tried to make her laugh. And I knew if I could make her laugh, that people probably at home or in their cars were laughing with us.
It worked.
Oh, absolutely.
So it was
and
fun.
I think that training has to come from being a master debater, too. I mean, you have to become more animated and a little more in tune with everything.
Yeah, I just try to feel everything I do. I mean, mm-hmm. you should see me before the shows when I practice. I'm like a madman. I'm, you know, I'm walking around going, hola amigos, ¿cómo estás? Hey, everybody, what's up? You know, I'm trying out different voices, see what works. And then in the moment, I forget everything, and I just do whatever comes naturally.
Interesting.
Yeah, how long from the radio show was it to Good Morning America, actually? Because you actually wrote and produced your own segments for that on a TV, TV Week. Personality plus style of broadcasting to the morning show genre was fantastic. So how long did that take you to get on GMA?
You know what? The GMA thing, I had a stint on Telemundo before that. It basically went from I did the improv, I went into the radio, then I did a show in Miami called The Scene, which was like Entertainment Tonight, but crappy. And they asked me to host it the week I decided to move, and I was like, I can't do that. So they asked me to do celebrity interviews. My very first celebrity interview was Woody Allen, believe it or not.
Wow.
I was totally, totally nervous. And I still remember, it's funny how stupid things you remember. I was like, have you ever thought about doing a movie about a 6'2" neurotic Cuban Jew from Miami? And he was like, that's all I ever think about. And I got him to do the Macarena because that was popular. So imagine Woody Allen doing the Macarena. It was really weird. And then I did a stint on Telemundo, and when I left on Telemundo, the recruiter for ABC News had heard of me because I was lucky enough. I won a couple of Emmys for some segments that I had done and produced and some shows that I had done. And it was Diane Sawyer who actually turned around in a room. I mean, I couldn't remember. She met me for the first time. She was, by the way, late to this interview. And I don't know what got over me. Sometimes I've got cojones made of brass. And she walked in late, and I said, Sawyer, you're late. Don't ever let it happen again. And I'd never met her before. And people were like, oh, the Cuban man's not the man.
I hate to cut you off. You did the same thing to Julia Roberts, though, when Julia Roberts gave you the 15-second segment, and you went into, oh, there's bitchy Julia Roberts, you know. You're at the top of your game getting 20 million per... I mean, it was freaking hilarious, buddy. Good stuff.
No, thanks. People can see that. What I just did was I just cut a new demo reel, and if you go to my Facebook page, you can see that Julia Roberts interview. You know what it is? I like to have fun with the celebrities. I don't treat anyone so reverentially that I put them up on a pedestal, even though
right.
that might be what I'm thinking. I feel like they're like my friends, like I've grown up with them. I mean, you know, I did the same thing to Oprah. I was like, how you doing, Oprah? And I just told her stories about how my grandfather thought she was the queen of all the African-American people. Because my grandfather didn't. He go, oh, the queen. I'm like, she's not the queen. There's no, like, you know, monarchy. And he used to. I would tell my grandfather. He would go, oh, she's the queen of the black people. And I was like, we say African American now. And he would call her African people American.
That's funny.
Oh yeah. Those were things. So I said that to Diane. You know, and everyone was like, oh, the Cuban man's not going to be in Good Morning America. And she
right.
turned around very, very graciously and said, this man is funny, and he needs to be here. And so there was really no position for me, but thanks to Diane Sawyer, I got to be on Good Morning America. And that for me, you know, that was the show I used to watch when we were little. Do you remember when we were little?
Mm-hmm.
They'd do the thing where, like, they get everybody in a town, and they'd be like, hi,
yeah,
we're here from, you know, Wachahaxee. Good Morning America.
Right. America, yep.
Yeah, and that was, you know, I got to be on that show. So that, to me, is cool stuff. You know, I mean, I still think
that's
of myself as a little
cool
Cuban kid from Miami.
That's very,
what,
very
what year
cool
was that? Was that 2006, Alex? I'm sorry to cut you off, Vic.
Honestly, I am so old that I no longer remember dates and times. And, you know, my manager, I said to a friend of mine, I'm so old that my driver's license is a stone tablet, you know, chiseled with Roman numerals. I honestly don't remember years and stuff, because then I left Good Morning America, and I had a sitcom deal for a while, believe it or not, because a lot of people say that I look like Seinfeld, and NBC was, you know, was like, oh my gosh, and I had never done that, so we tried to develop a sitcom for a while, and then Telemundo called me back, and they said, do you have any ideas to come back to Telemundo? And I said, yeah, how about a late night show? That hasn't really ever been done in Spanish. So we did that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We had the very first bilingual late night in this country.
Very cool.
Yeah, what was
the
title of that? Mas Vale Tarde?
Very nice. Dun, 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 dun. Thank you
yeah,
for playing Wheel of Latino.
Take a bow. Take a bow, Michael.
Mexican for don't be tardy for the party, actually. That came out.
Thank you. You are a real housewife.
I am.
Más vale tarde, yes. It's a play on there's a phrase in Spanish, más vale tarde que nunca, which is better late than never. So we took because it's a late night show, because I was just turning 39 when we did the show, we thought, hey, you know, better late than never. So it was Más vale tarde with Alex Cambert. And that was the name
that's
of the
very
show.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really, really, honestly, of everything that I've ever done, probably my favorite thing, because you know, a lot of times when you watch Spanish TV, it doesn't speak to me. It's a little bit more old school. It speaks to a different generation. And I wanted to do something that was bilingual, that was bicultural, that was for young Latinos that grew up in this country, that know as much about Juanes as they do Sandra Bullock, that know as much about, you know, Lindsay Lohan as they do about Angelica Valle. And there are those people. And, you know, I say I grew up on something called Arroz con Brady Bunch, which is a little bit of both. And that was our purpose. I've never worked with a greater sense of purpose because I wanted to give a dignified option to my people. You know, I wanted
absolutely
to say, you know, this isn't corny. This isn't hacky. This is really, really good. And I have to say,
I like that.
Well, you know what? We're on air. We have a responsibility to
absolutely
be our best, to be our best selves. You know, no offense, but I ain't Snooki, I ain't Jay Wow, I ain't any of those people. And
I hear
you know, and they have their place and whatever.
Right.
But I wanted to do something where Latinos could say, "Wow, this is great." You know, I'm tired of Leno, Letterman, Kimmel, Conan, Fallon. You know, Carson Daly. They all have their place. They're great. But how about something that speaks to me? How
exactly,
about, you know,
absolutely.
And so that's what we did.
That gave you the link
did
to, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
Again, the link to your first Emmy, too, which was La Silla Caliente. Your first effort out as producer garnered your first Emmy. I mean, that is, you're my hero. That is my dream, you know. I bow to the Mexican god that is you.
Gracias.
Michael does his homework. Alex, you can you tell Michael K seriously takes his homework seriously when he produces and research? He takes it very seriously. Can you tell?
I'm a little scared because you got all CSI on my ass. I was like, what else do you know? If you got a lock of my hair and a sample of my DNA, I'm getting the hell out of here. You're scaring me.
I have a little doll.
Stop it. You know what? Again, I was very lucky. That was during my first stint at Telemundo when they were doing an Entertainment Tonight show called Edición Especial, Special Edition, and they asked me, well, what do you want to do? You know, because we have reporters covering all sorts of things. And I said, I want to cover Hollywood. And they were like, oh, well, you know Hollywood in English, right? And I was like, well, yeah, of course Hollywood's in English, but they're like, well, we don't really do that because we cover the Latino stars. And I was like, well, it doesn't seem to me to be, you know, you've got people who do that. I'm basically an American kid. I grew up with rock music, you know. I love me a pre-crack Whitney, you know, like that's the stuff that I grew up with. So why not do this? Because Hollywood is everywhere. Who doesn't know Titanic? Who doesn't know, like, an Avatar? That, mm-hmm. Those movies have transcended language and culture. So mm-hmm. they were like, mm-hmm. okay, you know, we're willing to try if you believe you can do it. So I set about calling every Hollywood publicist, every, you know, major star and celebrity that I can think of. And one of the first interviews was Bruce Willis.
Wow.
And I remember he was promoting the movie Armageddon, and I had never, ever done Spanish TV before. And I, you know, I called my dad, and I was like, Dad, I mean, I don't know if my Spanish is good enough. Like, I'm really nervous. And he goes, no, son, you'll be fine. So I spent, you know, like a whole 6 months watching Spanish TV and listening to commercials to see how I could do it. And I remember I was 2 feet away from Bruce Willis. And I did, this is what I did. It was something like this. Hola, amigos, aquí estamos con Bruce Willis y su película Armageddon. I was yelling at him. The guy looked like, if you've ever seen those Maxell commercials where, like, the G-forces are hitting his face and he's all like, ah. It was from the power of my throat and my lungs. And I was yelling, and I was basically doing a Budweiser commercial in Spanish, like when they go, cerveza Budweiser.
Right.
And the executives are like, Alex, why are you talking that way? And I was like, because it's Spanish TV. Aren't you supposed to talk that way?
Right.
And, you know, we had a great time, and I interviewed everybody in Spanish. We did a special called La Silla Caliente, which is the hot seat, and is what I was known for. And, mm-hmm. and I'll tell you, it was more powerful than I anticipated, because I remember Latinos coming up to me and saying, thank you. And I was like, thank you for what? I'm getting paid to do what I do. And they're like,
we've
never had Hollywood acknowledge us in this way.
Right.
And
Alex, too, something getting back to you making that remark when I was on YouTube, of course, drooling over you, but really looking at all of your videos. It was interesting because that was something that actually struck me was that Hollywood recognizing the Latino community, because it is one, you know, it's one thing when you kind of look at, like you said, Letterman and all these shows and all the Access Hollywood and E Hollywood and blah blah blah, you know, it's basically your standard, you know, gorgeous blonde girl who's got the microphone, and you've got these fabulous people that sit behind the desk. And really, you know, the minority communities just really aren't that well represented in that. So literally, when I was watching you, kind of looking sort of at a series of your life and these interviews that you were doing, I was literally like sitting there thinking that, like, wow, you know, here it is that you have a Latino man who's doing all these great interviews with all these like A-lister stars. So even myself, that really dawned on me as I was sitting there watching all that for the first time. So congratulations to you on thinking that way and actually trying, you know, not trying, but executing it and doing that.
Well, thanks. I mean, for me, it just was important. I mean, I really appreciate that. To me, you know, I've never thought of myself less than. I've never thought, you know, this community in particular, the one that I serve when I do, you know, the Latin Spanish television, you know, it's huge at the box office. If you go, I mean, these are what the numbers are now. If you go to opening weekend of any action film or animated film in a major metropolitan city, 40% of that first weekend's gross comes from Latino audiences.
Wow.
And once I got that information, I went to every movie studio and I said, you've got to get me the people first, because that's 40% that you're reaching. You know, and if you look at the numbers, you know, the fastest growing segment of our population are the young Latinos.
Yeah, Latinos, yeah. I was going to piggyback off of that, because in my business of news, or you don't even have to be in news, I mean, you can literally watch the news and read any newspaper in America. I mean, all of us know, but more importantly, the information, you know, comes out when we talk about taking the census. I mean, everybody in America knows that the Latino community in the entire United States of America is the fastest growing community and basically outtaking every single other group within America. So, yeah, I mean, the numbers in that respect you can't deny because it speaks for itself.
Oh, yeah, it's there, and people will be shocked when they see this census. And those are just the numbers that are reported. I mean, there are many in the Latino segment for perhaps reasons of immigration or perhaps for reasons of language that go underreported. It's huge. But, you know, I've been really lucky, you know, and just as we've acknowledged Hollywood, you know, and Hollywood has acknowledged our community, you know, I was lucky. I got on The Tonight Show promoting a Spanish-language show. That has never,
yeah.
that was never been done,
mm-hmm.
you know, ever. Because, you
yeah.
know, usually the Spanish celebrities that you see promoting are already in English shows. You know, you'll see a Jennifer
right.
Lopez, you'll see a Salma Hayek. But I was like, you know, they're like, who the hell are you, you know, promoting a Spanish show? And Leno's people were really gracious and, you know, and really good. I mean, as a matter of fact, because people ask me, you know, what was it like being on Leno? Jay, super gracious. Before the show, he came and sat with me in the dressing room,
mm-hmm.
and he was really, really nice, and, you know, he was telling me how the interview is going to go, and he's like, you know, Alex, that's my Leno imitation, by the way, you know, he goes, you know, Alex, about a third of our audience, you know, they really are your fans, and they really want to see, you know, another third of your audience, you know, kind of know who you are, and, you know, just want to know more about you, and another third sort of really don't know you, but this is their chance to get to know you. And I was like, Jay, who the hell
okay.
are you kidding? Two-thirds of the people are like, who the hell is that guy? And a third is like, look, honey, Seinfeld speaks Spanish.
Right.
You know, they're like, what the heck are you kidding? But he was very gracious. And, you know, we got to promote our show. And Kimmel, by the way, did the exact same thing. We were on Jimmy Kimmel, too. So,
that's
you know,
wonderful.
all those are little milestones that, you know, happen,
yeah. Yeah,
and they're
right.
really great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right, and I was literally getting ready to say honestly what you said, that each time you do that little stuff, you know, maybe to people who don't get it, I get it, and I know Michael Kay gets it as well as our audience. All that stuff may seem small, but they really are small milestones that actually, you know, in the larger picture of things, to be able to have that happen and you be the first at that. Just means the next time it's going to be a lot easier for somebody else to come along and also repeat and do the exact same thing, I think.
No, it's amazing. I mean, I will tell you, now that I've passed a certain age, you know, it really warms my heart when I hear younger Latinos say, oh, thank you so much, you know, you did something that showed us that it could be done. And I'm like, wow, really? I didn't even think about it, because as you're doing it, you're not thinking about it.
Yeah.
You just are doing it. And, you know, all that's good stuff, and I've been very, very appreciative for all of
that. Well, it sounds like too. You decided, you know, in a sense, not to take the easy way out, but to use the platforms that you've been given, where people come to you and say, hey, you know, what, you know, how do you think we should do it? What do you think that, you know, you actually want to put some really thought into it and actually, you know, just not completely do crazy funny stuff just to make people laugh. But although you're doing crazy funny stuff to make people laugh, you put the right face on it. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you try to. You know what I mean? I never take anything for granted. I mean, people will tell you that have worked with me, I'm a pretty hard worker. You know, I really try to respect the audience. I don't try to coast. We try every time to get better and better and better. And for people who haven't seen the stuff, you know what? Go on to my Facebook page, check it out. I promise you, it'll be it's a 3.5 minute clip reel, and you'll see it, and you'll go, wow, it's funny, because it's, I mean, who's on it? I don't even remember. Michael, you and I were talking about this. Ben Affleck is on it. Courtney Cox,
Oprah.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise.
Oprah.
Sandy
Roberts. Olivia Newton-John. When you showed up dressed as Johnny, that was fun.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Alex, that, I'm telling you, I almost literally passed out. That was so freaking funny. I think I laughed like for even an hour after I saw that. That was still in my head. That was pretty funny. That's some good stuff.
Yeah, I'm an idiot. I was going to interview Olivia Newton-John. I was doing it for Spanish TV, and I was like, oh, let me do something fun and, you know, and great. So
he
I found
loved
a,
it.
Oh,
he
she was.
It.
By the way, she was so
she
was so great. She actually, because I wanted to do this ever since I was a kid. What do I do as I'm interviewing her? I start in the middle of the interview. I said, "I got chills, they're multiplying, and I'm losing control." And she goes, "And the power." So we started singing, "You're the One That I Want."
You know, could you have just cried right then?
It was
Olivia.
It was fantastic. It was fantastic. I said to her, "I'm the Latino John Travolta. I'm Juan Travolta." and she loved it. A week later, I saw her and John Travolta, and she ran up to me dragging John. And she's like, John, this is the man I was telling you about. This is the one I was telling you about. That kind of stuff makes me laugh. So, but again, who goes into an interview dressed as a Latino John Travolta? I'm an idiot.
Right.
I'm not
only
right.
You. Only
you.
Alex Tambor does.
Yeah, well, it was fun.
Alex,
you know what? Yes.
Sorry, but I just want to go ahead and mention the chat room. I've got a couple questions from the chat. I want to thank everybody live in chat with Alex Cambert and Thomas Victoria, Linda Lively Johnson, Mar Benner, great producer, Stephen McGraw. A couple questions from the chat. First, a comment. We would have to have pain meds for stomach if we saw him live. We would laugh ourselves into pain from Mar Ben. Where is he touring? Are you touring? Where are you coming up on? Where can we find you?
Oh, I'm sorry about the pain, by the way. Do not sue me for any pain that I may induce for any soiled undergarments. Please, I'm not touring right now. I took a little break last year. You know what? I wasn't finding any projects that I really, really loved. And then this year, after I came back from visiting my niece and my nephew in Miami, I was really, really energized. So I redid that demo reel, which I think is how you guys found me.
Right.
I started up on Facebook, and now we're waiting to see what the next project is going to be. Luckily, I have a really, really great team that believes in me, so I'm really careful about the projects that I choose, because once you choose them and go down a certain path, you can't unchoose them, and I want
right.
to be proud of the things that I do and the things that I leave behind, and then that includes even the silly stuff.
Right.
So we're just waiting now to see what the next stuff is. I have a couple of shows that I started developing as a producer, one of which I'm in talks with a big production company. I can't say their name, but it rhymes with Wee Mantle. But I can't say their name. But what we're going to do is, I think it's a funny concept, because people always say, "Oh, you're Latino," and as you did, Victoria, you were very kind about what I look like and whatnot. So I said, why don't we have a competition where we try to find this generation's Latin lover? Where is the ultimate Latin lover?
Uh-huh.
So we're
going to
put 12 guys in a house and see if we can. We're going to make them serenade a woman. We're going to make them dance. We're going to make them try to rescue a damsel in distress. We're going to do all sorts of old school Latin lover things to try to find this
goodness,
generation's
Alex,
Latin lover.
I am telling you, women are going to watch that like crazy. I can already see that. Yeah, I mean, I can already see that is going to be big. Yeah,
it's fun. You know what I mean? It's
great
a tongue in cheek. It's a tongue in cheek approach, and I wanted to do something again where I can take something that is representative of Latino culture and have fun with it. And so we'll see. I don't know. This is my first effort as a producer of reality shows, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed and everything else I can keep crossed. So I won't even be on camera in that. I'll be behind the scenes, which is totally a whole different experience. But honestly, it's a blast. Join me on Facebook. I'm gonna open up my website in a couple weeks with all sorts of clips that people have never seen, including some very dirty clips that were censored by. I know. I shouldn't put them up there, but I've got a couple with me, Tom Cruise, and Ben Affleck where we let the F-bomb fly, and I'm gonna put those up exclusively on my website, and I'll do all the tweeting and all the social.
Well, listen, do us a favor when. If, in fact, that project happens and you get the green light and you guys start taping and stuff, promise me you'll come back on the show and let us know about it.
I promise I will. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It sounds like
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic. Alex, I
want to
thank you so much for coming on tonight. I want to thank you. I actually found you through Victoria. I found it through Michael Taylor Gray from Pretty.
We love
Michael
Taylor Gray.
We love him. And I guess he works out at your gym, Alex. So that's how he went ahead and
that's
turned
how we
me
tracked
on
you
that
down.
Way.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Oh. That's what happened. You know what? I became friends with him because I was working on a charity project 2 years ago, and I saw him at the gym, and I was like, I don't know if you'd be interested in working on this. And he is a kind, sweet, dear soul who's working on a hysterically, if you have not seen it, pretty. The series is really funny, and that whole thing with Joan Van Ark at the end of the season, come
yes.
on. That was some funny stuff.
Yeah.
And he decided when he saw the new reel to be one of my friends that posted it up on Facebook, and he goes, people need to laugh. People need to see you. And he was very kind and very gracious. So I'm so glad that that he did that, and I'm glad that you guys found me.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Alex, one more question before you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Biggest star that you'd like to go interview from the chat room? Biggest star that you'd love to interview?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there's so many. I will tell you, the most surreal moment for me, and this was when I won my second Emmy, was for an interview with Robin Williams. Because for me, a kid who, you know, does comedy, to interview him, and I remember my grandfather, who was still alive at the time, saw the interview. And, by the way, it was a great interview, a stream of consciousness, two languages. We went up and down and crazy, and I don't know how it happened. I was able to keep up with him. His people were so gracious. He asked for the interview afterwards. He stood up and said, boss, that was funny. Wow. But my grandfather, may he rest in peace, I remember him saying, oh, Alex, it's a very beautiful day. The comedy boy and the comedy man in interview, much comedies. And to me, that's what I remember, much comedies from that. It was a surreal moment. I remember, like, floating through the air, sort of watching it, because Robin and I, and I'll actually, when I open up the website, I'll put a longer
right.
version of that clip. And it was so crazy and so all over the place that people had never seen anything like it. It got an Emmy. I was really, really proud of that.
Very
so
cool.
That's probably my favorite. I have a soft spot in it because it was my grandfather's favorite.
Oh, what a nice story. We got all, like, sentimental on you tonight, Alex, and we talked about serious issues, too. What a great interview.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, love. We'll chat in with you later on your career and life. And, hey, again, thank you so much for coming by. We always appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
All right.
Gracias, señor.
De nada.
Take care, buddy.
Michael,
talk to you soon.
Michael, tell everybody where they can find all of his information again, YouTube and Facebook, right?
You can find all this information on YouTube/AlexCambert or go to Facebook.com/AlexCambert and you can find all of his things. Or go ahead and check out my page, Michael K at Home with Victoria, at Victoria's page, Victoria Gaither, or my page, Michael Coach. But, yeah, great guy, handsome fella, so funny, and a good sense of self, Victoria.
Yes, 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 definitely, definitely, for sure. I think, you know, I think one thing, Michael K., that you know that I'm always more interested in sort of the news aspect of people. So I just think it's wonderful how he used those opportunities at those different networks and television stations and didn't sort of sell out in the sense of just being a complete goofball for the sake of being a goofball, but to use his art and his work and to actually put a better face on it. Within the Latino community, and I just think that's absolutely awesome. Now, I'll tell you though, what I really hope that he's able to get that reality show off the ground, because I really think that is a winner. I really, really do.
Yeah, that would be funny, and like when you go back to being funny and smart too, knowing when to pour on the funny, knowing when to pour on the charm, and knowing when to pour on the information. The man is just a class act all the way around. Deserves his late night talk show, whether it be Telemundo or American based. But seriously, when I saw his reel, just really, really funny, kind.
Yeah.
He interviews the likes of Kim Kardashian, Santana. You can go through. It has all of his Telemundo interviews. And, of course, they're all in Spanish. So they're, you know, hard to get to, but if you know a little bit, you can go ahead and
just
roll with
funny,
him. But just
yeah.
A fantastic guy. Just a funny guy, absolutely.
I
so
just
happy
think,
to be able to join us.
I think again, my funniest by far had to be when he did the interview with Olivia Newton-John and he came on there dressed. I mean, because you could clearly see Olivia Newton-John. I mean, you could see from her gut that she thought that was the funniest thing that she had ever seen in her life. Just the reaction on her face was just absolutely just priceless. Just priceless.
It
yeah.
was good too. And also the interview with Sandra Bullock where he talks to Sandra Bullock's butt. She actually turns around and she says, "Why be in?" It's oh my God, it cracks me up. So I mean just this the nerve it takes to do that to the major Hollywood stars is pretty fantastic. So that's a talented man you're gonna hear a lot more from. So once again, just so happy you could join us, Vic. What do you have coming up? You got a lot of projects coming up.
Yeah, let's see. Friday, I am in Baltimore at the Marriott. I'm doing a speaking about how to maximize social networking for your business, so the Winner Summit. That's Deborah Hardnick. So I'm having the opportunity to do that. I talk at 2 o'clock. So I hope to bring a lot of good information for folks that are in businesses. And it's mainly focusing on women. So these are women that are interested in starting their own business. These are women that are interested in how, you know, using social network is going to benefit them, the good and the bad. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then you and I have a event that is coming up in D.C. That is raising money for abused children. That's a fashion show, so that's coming up in April. And then I've got a program that I'll tell you guys a little bit more about once I get some more information. Michael Kay and I are going to be co-hosting together a musical program with in Chantilly, Virginia, and that's also coming up in April. So you know what that means. When it starts to get warm outside, that means At Home with Victoria, you and I are always on the road at different events speaking and doing our interviews and all of that that good stuff.
Yeah, it'll be a fun time. I can't wait to go ahead and join you, Vic. We're going to have some good hors d'oeuvres and have a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I know. So are we? We're ending the show tonight with the one and only. So tell me, Shelley Rand has a new song out, right? We love Shelley.
Shelley Rand, yeah, our gal has a new song out called Gypsy Traveler, and we're going to go ahead and play that. Plus, at the end of the show, you get to hear our brand new clothes, also done by Shelley Rand. So very excited to go ahead and do that. Once again, I want to go ahead and mention everybody in chat. Marilyn Bennett, thanks for producing. Linda Lively, Steve McGraw, guest 8429, and all of the brand new listeners. So, Vic, I had a great
good night.
I hope you had a good laugh.
I did, too. Good night, everybody. Let's listen to some music.
You've been listening to At Home with Victoria, an interactive news and entertainment show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Download us on iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook. I'm Shelley Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.